yesterday that Yitzhak Blaser, who was known as Rav Yitzhak Tetteberger, was the most outstanding Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter in Musa, and he was the one who moved on the Musa movement.
They can't hear. Maybe the volume higher and hold right in front of you now.
Okay. Rav Yitzhak Blaser, who was a rabbi in St. Petersburg for 16 years, wrote a sefer, Shalas HaTshuvas, that's called Pre-Yitzhak. Very strong tshuvas. He writes tshuvas and he does the research like a detective work. Whenever there's a dinner Shulchan Aruch, so he always goes to the original sources and he checks as many versions of that source as possible to ascertain exactly what the root of the din is. It's very nice tshuvas. So, among the famous tshuvas that he's known for is number one, the Mishnah Brura quotes that there's a dispute in Rishon, and this comes up every winter. Is it permissible l'chatchila to daven Shmona Esrei of Shachris before sunrise? A lot of people have to go to work, so they have to daven Shachris before sunrise. So if you're stuck. So the Mishnah says in Megillah, as long as you daven any mitzvah that has to be fulfilled in the daytime, let's say Tkiyah Shofar, reciting of Hallel, shaking the lulav, on Yom Tov, people usually daven later. Chalamayit, a lot of people go to work. So the question is it okay l'chatchila to perform the mitzvah before sunrise? So the Mishnah says l'chatchila you should not, but b'nieved, as long as it's after Alos HaShachar, one is in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes a dispute among the Achronim whether that lachatchila, not to shake the lulav and not to say Hallel and not to bench Esrig before sunrise, does that carry over to davening Shachris, Mishman Esrig Shachris also? What's the issue? Because in the Beis Hamikdash, every single day the Tamid Shal Shachar was brought at the crack of dawn, way before sunrise. And the Zmanei Tfilah, the Zmanim that the Chachamim established with respect to davening Shachris Musaf Mincha Ma'ariv, the Zmanim always correspond to the Zmanim of the Hakrovas HaKarbonis in the Beis HaMikdash. The Shachris Zman corresponds to the Zman of the Tomet Shel Shachar. The Mincha Zman corresponds to the Tomet Shel Beinim Abayim. The Musaf corresponds to the Zman of Hakrovas HaMusafim. And the Ma'ariv corresponds to the Zman of Hekta Chalovim Be'evarim, of the burning of the chaylev of these karbonis. So on the one hand, one could argue, like the pre-chadosh, that it's permissible l'chatchila to daven shachris before sunrise, because in the Beis HaMikdash, they always, every single day, they brought the Talmud Shal Shachar way before sunrise. So the Mishnah Berurah paskens against that. In his opinion, he counts up the achronim. His perception is that the rov achronim disagree with the pre-chadosh and hold that just like the Tkiyah Shofar you're not supposed to do before sunrise, so Shachris also. Okay, so Rav Yitzhak Tetteberger has a very strong tshuva about this, and he disagrees. He says it's not correct. He says there is a concept in the Gemara of davening like Vosikin. Vosikin means Chassidim Anshei Maisa, very pious people. So there were in the days of the Tanoim, and we still have today, people who daven every day Vosikin. They arrange the davening in such a way to have on their talis and tefillin, and they start davening in such a way that they'll complete reciting of Kriya Shema right before sunrise and begin the Shmon Esrei of Shachris immediately after sunrise. What is this based on? So the Gemara says it's based on a pasuk in Tehillim, where the pasuk reads, Yiro'ucho im Shamesh, that the tzaddikim demonstrate that Yira Shemayim as the sun is coming up. Unlike other Ovdei Avodah Zarah who worship the sun, because the sun has power, energy, and so on, unlike the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the sun is coming up. We mekabel al malchus shamayim immediately before the sun comes up. We recite Kriya Shema. Then we recite Shmon Esrei right after the sun comes up. So that's the full mitzvah of Vosikin. There is, however, a Mishnah in Brachas, where the Mishnah says if a person is being tovel in a mikveh, and obviously he's not dressed, so obviously he's not prepared to daven Shmon Esrei, and he sees that the sun is about to rise, The Mishnah says he should quickly recite Kriya Shema. What's the behola? What's the big rush? So the Gemara says, because he wants to say Kriya Shema like Vosikin. But that's not the real Vosikin. The real Vosikin is that you put on talis and tefillin on the weekdays, and you daven, the whole davening, you arrange your zman tefillin in such a way that you complete the Kriya Shema right before the sun rises, and the Shema Nesir is recited right after the Hanetzacham, right after the sunrise. So nonetheless, even though this is not the full mitzvah of Vosikin, but it's a partial Vosikin, that one should recite Kriya Shema to be mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim, even though he's not dressed at all. He has to cover up the parts of his body that should not be uncovered when he says the Kriya Shema. He says the Kriya Shema when he's half undressed. He's only half dressed. So the question is, maybe that's what the Rabitzel Teterburger claims. L'chadchile, you shouldn't daven Shmon Esrei before Hanetzachama, because you should always arrange to daven like Vosikin. Daven Shachris in such a way that the Kriya Shema will be right before sunrise, and the Shmon Esrei will be right after. But there is no din l'chadchile, you shouldn't say Shmon Esrei before sunrise. If you say before sunrise, you'll only have half a Vosikin. Then let the Kriya Shema be recited soon before sunrise. You won't have the full Vosikin, but you're not in violation of the din in the Mishnah that l'chadchile, you really shouldn't say halal and you shouldn't perform a bris mila and so on before sunrise. So he quotes many Rishonim and he insists that that's the din, that it's mutar l'chadchile, that if a person has to run to work, it's mutar l'chadchile that he can daven at the earlier minyan. He just won't be in fulfillment of Vosikin, which anyway he's not fulfilling Vosikin. Vosikin means Chassidim Anshei Maisa. That's Amidas Chassidus, to daven in such a way, to have the Shema right before sunrise and the Shema Nesir right after. Abitzele had a problem here in St. Petersburg. The sun rises so early. So the Sofisma, the sun rises here something like 3:45 or something, in Moscow. So the Sofisma Kriya Shema here ends very early in the morning. So let's say on Shabbos and Yontif, on the weekdays you can daven at an early minyan. But on Shabbos and Yontif, it says in Shulchan Aruch, the minyan is that we daven a little later than in the weekdays. So you're going to miss the Sofisma Kriya Shema. So in the Mishnah Berurah it says it's not a problem. Just make sure that you say Kriya Shema before davening, and then even though it's after the Sofisma Kriya Shema, the Mishnah says you're still permitted to recite the Birchas Kriya Shema later. So you daven at the late minyan, and you say Kriya Shema before. So Abitzalah has all tshuva, and he says that that's not correct. That l'chadchila, more correct is that you have to recite Kriya Shema during the Zman, before the Sofisma Kriya Shema, with the Birchas Kriya Shema. The more correct way, midrabbanan, of fulfilling the mitzvah Kriya Shema is Kriya Shema in Birchas Seder, Kriya Shema al Seder HaBrochas. Min HaTorah, you just say Kriya Shema, midrabbanan, there on the Sakein, have to recite the three brochas in connection with the three parshiyos of Shema. Each brocha of Kriya Shema spells out the themes of each of the three parshiyos of Shema. First brocha, Yetzirah, Vari Choshech. Maybe Loila spells out the theme of Hashem Echad. We believe in one God, who's both the God of light and the God of darkness, the God of daytime, the God of nighttime. We believe in one God, unity of God. There's only one God, monotheism. The second bracha spells out Avarabba, but seldom spells out the themes of the Hoyoim Shemaya. And the third bracha, Goal Yisrael, spells out the theme of Itzias Mitzrayim. That's the theme of the third parsha. So since the din requires that you have to say Kriya Shema before the Sofisma Kriya Shema, you have to recite the Birchas L'chadchile. You should recite the Birchas Kriya Shema then also. There is no minyan, you davening b'chidah. So he says it's preferable to recite Kriya Shema with the brachos, with smichas gula l'tfila, all b'chidahs, rather than to daven with the minyan at the later zman, and just against the Mishnah Berurah. Against the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says, say Kriya Shema in advance before the Sofisma Kriya Shema, and then daven in the minyan. And even though you didn't say the Birchas Kriya Shema within the Sofisma Kriya Shema, it's not a problem. Rabitzela says it's not a problem, but he added, well, l'chadchila, that's not right. So he feels that this takes precedence. Reciting Kriya Shema al Seder HaBrachas with the Smichas Gula L'Tvila takes precedence over Tefillah B'Tzibur. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that in the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim, that if the only minyan in town is going to daven in such a way that they're not going to make Kriya Shema Bizmano, so rather than say Kriya Shema before and daven with the minyan, it's preferable to do like Rav Yitzchak said, to daven b'yichidus, to say Kriya Shema Bizmano, I'll say the Habrachas, then to have the Smichas Gudul Tefillah. Pasuk says in Parshas Bahaloischa, "V'yom simchaschem u'maradechem u'broshich anshechem miskaitem ha'chatzaitzus." What's the purpose of tkiyas chatzaitzus in the Beis Hamikdash in conjunction with the akrovas akorbanos? So the pasuk says, "V'nizkartem l'tnei Hashem alakem." We, by our blowing chatzaitzus, we will be remembered by Hashem. So the tefillah that we add in the davening on Rosh Chodesh and on Chalamoid and on Yavim Tov, Miyala B'Yav Zichroneinu Fikdoneinu, is based on that pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'nizkartem," we will be remembered. So today we don't have any chatzaitzus, so we say the tefillah, Yala B'Yav Zichroneinu Fikdoneinu. On Shabbos, the simple reading of the psukim, the simple reading of the Mishnah, is that there was no kiyas chatzaitzus. Kiyas chatzaitzus was only this Ivrei on that Pasuk says Yom Simchaschem refers to Shabbosim, that they blew Chatzaitzus on Shabbos also. But in the Mishnah it wouldn't seem so. We just learned a couple of days ago the Mishnah in Erechin and the Daf Yomi. Mishnah doesn't seem to say it like that. The Mishnah seems not to agree with this Ivrei, that they didn't blow Chatzaitzus on Shabbos. And that's why on a regular Shabbos we don't recite Yalav Yom. Yavuyov is Zichroneinu, the Nizkartem of Ne'ashan Lakechem only applies on Rosh Hashechem, Ma'adechem Rosh Hashechem. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Maharil, who records that the practice of the Bali Atesus was if you have Rosh Chodesh Shecholiyos B'Shabbos, a Yontav Shecholiyos B'Shabbos, so you have to say Yalav Yavoy, because it's Rosh Chodesh, or because it's a Chalamayin, a Yom Tov, let's say. So when you're reciting Yalav Yalav, you say, B'yom Chagamatzis Hazeh, or you say, B'yom Rosh Chodesh Hazeh. Do you mention also, B'yom HaShabbos HaMarech Hazeh, B'yom Rosh Chodesh Hazeh? Do you mention Shabbos also? Shabbos doesn't fit in Yalav Yalav. Yalav Yalav is because Zichroneinu, Yalav Zichroneinu is based on Minis Kartem. On Shabbos there was not Kiyas Chatzaitzus. So the Ramah quotes the meaning of the Maril that in the Shmona Esrei, when you say Yalav Yavoy, the meaning is that you say B'yom HaShabbos HaMarech Hazeh, B'yom Rosh Chodesh Hazeh. The Mishnah Berurah writes that nobody today observes that practice. We don't do that anymore. So the Mefarshim ask a question: why did they ever do this? Why was this the practice of the Bali HaTosfos? If the whole concept, the whole idea of Nizkartem only applies to Rosh Chodesh and to Yom Tov, doesn't apply to Shabbos. So why shouldn't you mention Shabbos in Yalav Yavoy? So Rabbi Yitzchak Peterburger has a tshuva where he discusses the following issue. We have the opinion of the Halachas Gedolos. Allah is a sefer that was written before the days of Rashi and Tosfos. It was written in the days of the Gaonim. The Gaonim were the heads of the yeshiva. The name, the official name of the yeshiva was Yeshivas Gaon Yaakov, the pride of the Jewish people. Gaon doesn't mean a genius, it means pride of the Jewish people. And the fundraisers, the president of the yeshiva was known as Rosh Yeshivas Gaon Yaakov. Some of them were talking great Gaonim and some of them were good fundraisers. Not necessarily such great Talmid Chacham. The famous ones are those who were the big Talmid Chacham. So the Sefer Halachas Gedolos was written in the days of the Gaonim. I'm not sure exactly who wrote it. There are different suggestions. Some say it was written by one of the Gaonim, but it was certainly written in the generation of the Gaonim. So the Halachas Gedolos claims that when a woman benches licht to be mekabel Shabbos, you have to bench licht before sunset on Friday afternoon. So when a woman benches licht, then it becomes Tosefes Shabbos for her and for all the members of the family, whether they like it or not. They have to observe Shabbos. So that was the practice years ago in the days of the Bali HaTosfos, they were choshish for the opinion of the Halachas Gedolos. Every so often, Tosfos quotes an opinion from the Halachas Gedolos, from the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, and they disagree, but they say out of respect for the Halachas Gedolos, we don't violate his opinion. Like he says, if you missed a day in Sfira, so you can't continue to count. So Tosfos says there is no such din, they don't agree, but out of respect, so they say you should count without a bracha. We don't want to violate the opinion of the Halachas Gedolos. Or the Halachas Gedolos came up with a chiddush that even though in the simple reading of the Gemara would appear that men and women are equally obligated to read the Megillah, and therefore a woman should be able to read the Megillah for a man. So the Halachas Gedolos says not so. You don't allow the obligation of a woman is on a lower level than that of a man, because it really should be a mitzvah saseh, shehazman grama, the women should be exempt. And nonetheless, the Gemara says the Chiddush, women are chayv and mikra Megillah, so their obligation is on a lower level. So a man can read the Megillah for a woman, but a woman can't read the Megillah for a man. So Tosfos doesn't think that it's correct. But they say we don't want to violate the opinion of the Halachas Gedolos, because he lived in the days of the Gaonim. The Gaonim had traditions from the days of the Amoraim. They were in the yeshivas, where Abai and Rabbi used to learn in the same cities, in the same yeshivas. So Tosfos is concerned maybe he had a tradition in the days of the Amoraim. So here also the Halachas Gedolos comes up with this wild idea, which the other Rishonim are not happy with, that once the woman benches licht on Friday, it's Kabbalah's Tosefes Shabbos for her and for all the members of the family. Where did they get this from? Where did the Halachas Gedolos get it from? It's based on a Gemara in Erevin, on Daf Mem, where the Gemara says that when we recite Shehechiyonu on Pesach Shavuos Sukkos and Rosh Hashanah, so we can really say Shachyanu in Shul, like we do on Leil Yom Kippur. After Kol Nidre, we say Shachyanu. Or you can say Shachyanu Omra Afila Bashuk as you're walking in the street. But if you save the Shachyanu to recite it at the end of the Kiddush, so you enhance the Chashivas of the Bracha, you convert it into a Bracha ala Kos, like you make a toast. Instead of Stam saying a blessing to Mr. Putin, so you say a blessing, Mr. Putin, over a cup of wine, over a cup of schnapps, alachayim. So you add chashivas to the brach of Shachyanu if you convert it into a brach alakos. But strictly speaking, it can really say the Shachyanu even without the wine. So the Gemara says, what do you do with Shachyanu on Leil Yom Kippur? Do you recite Shachyanu over a cup of wine? Do you enhance the chashivas of the bracha by saying over a cup of wine? But if no one's going to take a sip of the wine, so that's not a toast. A toast is only if you drink the l'chaim. So the Gemara says, well, who's going to drink it? Once you say Shachyanu, it's going to be Yom Kippur already. Can't say Shachyanu and have in mind that you're not Mekabel Yantif. Once you say Shachyanu, it's already Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we should give it to a child before Bar Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, that's a very bad chinuch. The child will grow up and he won't always be with that rabbi that he was with when he was a young child. And he'll think that on Leil Yom Kippur, even after Bar Mitzvah, you can drink a cup of wine. And the Gemara says, and you can't say Shachyanu and drink the wine and have in mind not to be Mekabel Yom Kippur. Shachyanu has to be recited on Yom Kippur, on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, once you say Shachyanu, it's Kabbalah's Tosefes Yom Kippur, for the one who said the Shachyanu. Said the Halachas Gedolos came up with this Chiddush, that once the woman of the house, or whoever, once someone benches licht for the whole family, so it's a Kabbalah's Tosefes Shabbos for the whole family. So the Baalei HaTosfos, all the Rishonim disagree with this idea of the Halachas Gedolos. They say Shachyanu can only be recited on Yom Tov, but Halachas Aneres by definition is done on Erev Shabbos. So why in the world should you assume that the Hadlokas Haneris, or the reciting of the Bracha, L'Hadik Ner Shal Shabbos, why should that constitute a Kabbalah's Tosef and Shabbos? So they think the Halachas Gedolos is not correct. So we made a bit of a compromise with respect to other members of the family, so we don't observe the Chumr at all. Because the wife benches licht and the husband didn't daven mincha yet. If the husband would have been Mekabel Shabbos and the wife benched licht, he wouldn't be allowed to daven tefillah schol. You're not permitted to daven tefillah schol on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So in the days of the Rishonim, the Magen Avraham quotes, in the days of the Baalei HaTosfos, there used to be machma like the Halachas Gedolos. So when they would daven mincha in shul, they would send one of the children home to tell the mother she should bench licht because they finished mincha already. They wouldn't want the wife to bench licht before they daven mincha, then they wouldn't be allowed to daven mincha. So we don't do that anymore. We're not machma like the Bahag at all with respect to the Bnei Habayis. With respect to the woman herself, so the chatchila we're machma. So the woman should do all the malachas she wants to do, she has to do before she benches lift. And then when she says the bracha la'avik neshal Shabbos, she should be mekabel to sefer Shabbos. But if there's a big shas hadchak, let's say she lives very far away from the shul, so she's going to bench lift, it's Leil Yom Kippur, she wants to go to shul, and it's a 45-minute walk, and she wants to drive to shul, so she should say the bracha la'avik neshal Yom Kippurin, and have in mind that she's not mekabel Yom Kippur, she's going to drive to shul. If she does that, then for sure she shouldn't say Shachyonu, though, on Erev Yom Kippur when she lights the candle. You say Shachyonu, that says Befemish and Nigmar, that's Kabbalah's Tosefes Yontif, while Korchah Shalotim, otherwise the Shachyonu will be a Brachal of Abtolim. So Abitzalah raises a Sofek, what's the din if you have Yom Kippur, what's the din, let's say, if you have Yontif Shachaldias Bishabbos, and the Balabosta benches Licht, and she says, Shechyonu. You don't recite Shechyonu on Shabbos, you recite Shechyonu on Yom Tov. So when she says Shechyonu on Erev Yom Tov, that's Kabbalah's Tosefes Yom Tov. But let's say she still wants to put some food up on the fire to cook. So on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook food. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to. So can the Balabasta be Mekabal Tosefes Yom Tov without being Mekabal Tosefes Shabbos? The question is, when you have Yontif, Shecholias, the Shabbos, do the two Kedushas blend in to be one? Shabbos, Yontif, hyphenated, it's one big Kedusha Sayyim, Shabbos and Yontif together? Or do you say, no, the two separate Kedusha Sayyims, one superimposed on top of the other, the day happens to be Shabbos and it happens to be Yontif, each one separate, they don't combine together. So this is a topic that has several ramifications, different ramifications. So this is what Rabbi Tzala Petterburger raises the suffix in his chubis. He says he's not sure what the din is. If it's Yontem Shecholius B'Shabbos, and the Balabasta lit the candles, and she has in mind that she doesn't want to be Mekabel Shabbos, but you can't have in mind she doesn't want to be Mekabel Yontem if she's saying Shachyonu. So once she says Shachyonu, and it's Kabbalah's Tosef as Yontem, the Shabbos tag along also, it's Tosefes Shabbos as well, or no? Maybe the two Kedushas are separate. And just because the Yontif was, she was Mekabal Tosefes Yontif, by reciting Shechyonah, doesn't necessarily mean that the Tosefes Shabbos is Chal. So this is one of the more famous discussions that Rabbi Tzala has. As a Tshuva Halacha Lamaisa also, which is very relevant to us very often, the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch quotes a Tshuvas HaRashba that runs as follows. The Chumash tells us that if a woman is a Grusha, she's not permitted to marry a Kohen. But a Grusha means she was married to the man and the husband gave her a get. What if, let's say, the husband gave his wife a pasul a get? That's not a Grusha. So the Mishnah in Gittin has a din of a Reach a get. The husband gave his wife a pasul a get, but it smells like a get, it looks like a get, but it's not really a kosher get. So the Mishnah says, even if the husband gave his wife, the Mishnah gives an example of a get that's pasul. A rare case, a get that's pasul. So let's say the husband is a kohen, and he gave his wife a pasul a get, so you should have thought that there's nothing with nothing, garnish with garnish, because the get was not kosher. So the Mishnah says, no, there's a thing of reach a get, and she's considered a grusha a kohen, and now the husband who's a kohen has to divorce her. Well, let's say the husband is not a kohen. He gave his wife this pasul a get, and then the husband dies later on. So you don't say the woman is an almana. You say the woman is a grusha, because the first husband gave her a get that was questionable, that was really pasul. So that was a reach a get. So that's a question, whether that's a dim in a Torah or a dim in the Rabbana, whatever it is, but there is such a dim. So the Ramah quotes a Tshuvas HaRashba, who seems to say that the din of reach a get even applies. The Gemara seems to say it's only in one case, one rare case, a very strange case, where the husband gives his wife a get and he says, "Arei bugureshes mimeni, and I don't permit you to marry anybody else, which is lech alech. That's ridiculous. That's not a get. I don't want to be responsible to support you, you know, but I don't want you to be mutarisli inasil lashuk. So there is no such kind of a get. So nonetheless, it has a din of a rech I get. So the Rashbo has it. That's what the Rama quotes in Shuvas Rashbo. The Rashbo has a chumrah. Then let's say it's negel halacha bayas. What's the din if a woman had a couple had a civil marriage and they never had chuppah v'kiddushin? Many of the Jews in Russia under the communists, they were married civilly, but they never had chuppah v'kiddushin. And then they decide they want to get divorced. So do they really need a get or not? So this was a big issue before the Second World War. There were so many Jews who were getting married civilly. They weren't so observant. They never had chuppah v'kiddushin. So the overwhelming majority, there was a rabbi, Tzvi Ferber, in London, who had learned in Slobodka. He put out several svarim. So one of the svarim was, he corresponded with many of the batidinim in Europe and in America, and he asked them what's their position on this issue. If a couple was civilly married, they never had chuppah v'kiddushin, did they need a get? So the standard all over the world was, l'chatchila, we're machmer to require a get. But mikra din, you don't really need to get it. You can't get the get, so we allow the woman to remarry without a get. He writes in his sefer, the only two who were machmer were Rabbi Henkin from New York and the Ragachava Goyim. They held that mikra din, you need a get, and if there's no get, she's not allowed to be married. So the question is, this kind of a couple, let's say there was a couple who only had a civil marriage, and it's only a chumrah that they need a get, and if she won't be able to get a get, we will permit her to marry anyway. So let's say the Desna arranged for a get, and she permitted to marry a kohen. The get was only given the chumrah. We hold you really didn't need it. So a get that's given the chumrah, they have to treat that like a rech I get to say she's not allowed to marry a kohen. So the Rama and Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber knows about this Truba Saraj Bo. He quotes it in the Beis Yosef. And the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't quote. And the Rama quotes this Lahalocha. So this is usually assumed to be a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Chacham Avadya was always mekel on this. Whenever the get was only given the Chumrah, he would permit the girl to, permit the woman to marry a kohen. And he would allow it even for Ashkenazim. That was his practice. He would give Sfardim psak to Ashkenazim. And Ashkenazim usually followed the Rama, that if the get was given the Chumrah, so it passes the kahuna. So then the Beis Shmuel adds on that even if the woman went ahead and married a kohen b'di'evet, we would insist she has to get divorced. Not only l'chatchila she should marry a kohen, even b'di'evet she married a kohen, she still has to get divorced. So Abitzel of Petterburger has a tshuva where he shows, he checks all of the Rashbos where the Rashbo discusses the topic, and he said the Rashbo doesn't exist. The Rashba never said it. He raised the possibility, and the Rashba rejects it, both in his Chidushim on the Gemara and in the Tshuvas. So he says that this whole Rama is really a mistake. He says he doesn't have broad enough shoulders to go paskin against the Rama. But b'di'evet, if she went ahead and she married a kohen, so to say, like the Beis Shmuel quotes from the Bach, even b'di'evet, and this is Teitzeh, she has to get divorced from the kohen. So that's on his achrayas, he says, you can follow my opinion, that b'di'evet, for sure, she married a kohen. She doesn't have to get divorced. This comes up every month in the Dungeon. This issue comes up all the time. It comes up l'chatchila, and it comes up b'di'evet as well. So this Rabbi Tzal Aponovich, Rabbi Tzal Petterburger, has a very strong tshuva about this. He says that the whole Rama, who's quoting the Chuvas Rashba, he thinks the whole thing is an error. There was a big issue here in St. Petersburg. Rabbi Tzal was the rabbi here for 16 years. They're not sure exactly what motivated him to leave after 16 years. He was getting a very good salary. So why did he leave? So the different suggestions are given. So some say that we know historically one of the big maskilim was a big shegetz, a Yudaleib Gordon, Yudlam and Gordon, lived in St. Petersburg, and he would always harass him in public. He would always write essays attacking him in the newspaper and harassing him in public. So some think that he, after 16 years of aggravation, he felt that he had enough and he couldn't take it anymore. And others give different suggestions. Others say that he was very upset. He had to be Masadigit sometimes in the church. Every so often, one of the wives had converted to Christianity. And Rabitzala, the husband, wanted to remain Jewish, and the wife became a Christian. So he had to be Masadigit in the church. They don't explain why, how to take place in the church, but that's what they write in Islam. So he felt very uncomfortable about that. So some say that's the reason why he left. Others give a different, slightly different variation of this, that when the husband and the wife were born, they were given a Yiddish name, and then over the years they were not observant, many of them were not observant at all. So they never used the Yiddish name that they were given at birth. What we call the Shem Arisa, the name that they were given when they were in a cradle. So that was a big machlokes between Rav Mordechai Banet and Nechan Sam Sofer. Sam Sofer was a rabbi in Pressburg, in Hungary, and Rav Mordechai Banet was the rabbi, chief rabbi of the whole region. So that was a big machlokes. Do you always write the Yiddish name, the Hebrew name first, and then you write Hamechuna on the Goyish names? Or sometimes you should ignore the Yiddish name that's no longer used. Shem Arisa is very often considered Shem Shenishtaka. They don't use it at all. And even if you do use it, but the Goyish name that he goes by is the more popular name, so maybe you should write that name first.
2 minutes. 2 minutes.
We'll continue later. Many women have the practice that when the husband comes home from shul on Leil Yom Tov, the wife benches licht on Yom Tov. It's a very common practice. Rabitzala Petaburger has in his Truvas that he thinks that that's not proper at all. Just like on Shabbos, there are two mitzvahs that appear in the Sefer Yeshaya, known as Kibud V'Yoneg. And the Nagoyin gives the definition, what is kibud, one is oneg. So all the preparations, all the hachanas that are done in advance of Shabbos, the Pasuk in Yeshaya is speaking about Shabbos, the karasa l'Shabbos oneg, the kadosh Hashem mechubad. So all the preparations done in advance of Shabbos are considered kibud. And then if I vacuum the rug, I set the table, I take a shower, I put up the cholent, I put up all the food on top, I cook all the food, I prepare everything for Shabbos. Then the fact that I eat the food on Shabbos, and I enjoy the fact that the house is clean and neat and the food is delicious, that's called oneg. So the Rambam writes that all of the four mitzvahs of Shabbos carry over to Yom Tov. He says there are four mitzvahs regarding Shabbos, two in the Chumash and two in the Navi Yeshaya. The two in Chumash, Azocha v'shamar. Zocha means you have to recite Kiddush. Shamar means Shamar Shabbos. You shouldn't do malacha. And the two that appear in the Sefer Yeshaya are kibud v'yoneg. So the Rambam writes that in Biblical Hebrew, the word Shabbos refers sometimes to Yom Tov. The Torah tells us we should start counting Svira the day after Shabbos. And our tradition has it, it does not mean that you always count Sfira on a Sunday, the day following Shabbos. Means start counting Sfira the first day Chol HaMoed, the day following Yom Tov Pesach. Yom Tov Pesach is called Shabbos. So the Rambam says that all the four mitzvahs regarding Shabbos, Zocha B'Shamar, Kibud V'Yoneg, all the four mitzvahs carry over to Yom Tov, because Yom Tov in Biblical Hebrew is also referred to as a Shabbos. This is a problematic Rambam. The Gemara seems to say explicitly that Kibud V'Yoneg only applies to Shabbos, not to Yom Tov, but somehow or another the Rambam has been accepted. Maybe he has some other Gemara, a different source. The Rambam says that Kibud V'Yoneg applies to Yom Tov. So the Rambam writes also that Hadlokas HaNeiros is both a mitzvah of Kibud and Oneg. The fact that you light the candles on Erev Shabbos is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of kippah. The fact that you enjoy the house being lit up on Shabbos is the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. So if you carry over all of these four mitzvahs, Zachar, Veshomer, Kippah, V'Yoneg, to Yontif, it comes out that even though you're permitted, Mitzat Malacha, you would be permitted to light candles on Yontif if it would be dark in the room. If it's not dark, then you're lighting candles unnecessarily. So that's called Havara, Ner Shel Avtola. A person is lighting a candle for no good purpose. You're permitted to do Malachas on Yontif if there's a Tzarech HaChol Nefesh, or a Tzarech HaGuf, or a Tzarech HaYom Tzas. But Shalom Tzarech and Gansan, you're not allowed to. So let's say if the room is dark and you light candles from an already existing flame, so then Mitzad Malacha, there's no problem, but you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Kibud. So more correct is that a person should Zind on Licht on Erev Yontif, the same as on Erev Shabbos. You should light the candles before. Not just on Erev Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur, there's no Heter Echol Nefesh. Even on Pesach Shavuos Sukkos also. But there is a Heter Echol Nefesh. And if the house is dark, you're certainly permitted Mitam Malacha. There's no Issa Malacha. But you won't be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kippur if you wait till Yontif to light the candles. You really light it on Erev Yontif. The Pri Yitzchok has that. Others say it over. It's in the yeshivas. It's famous in the name of Bershad Bersolovichi, the author of the Beis Halevi. He has this analysis also. But the Pri Yitzchok has the whole story in his sefer as well. What correct is to be Madlik Neiris on Erev Yontif. Unless Erev Yontif is Shabbos, or if you have 2 days Yontif. So then it's an issue. Are you allowed to light candles on the first day for the second day? If you don't really need the candles on the first day, that's an issue. Rabbi Soloveitchik told over an interesting Maisa Shehoya, an interesting story, which involved the Shailin Halacha. The story goes as follows. It wasn't so common that people were getting divorced in Europe 100 years ago. Today, the Sofrim who write the Gittin know the whole text of the Get by heart because they do 5 Gittin every day. In America and in Eretz Yisrael, more people, a much higher percentage of people getting divorced today than 100 years ago. So years ago, the Sofrim didn't know the text of the Get by heart, so what they would do would be, you take an old Get, and the old Get was already given previously, so you take the old get and you change the date. Instead of saying it took place on Wednesday, the first day was Chodesh Tammuz, and Shnas Tavshin Ayin Tes, that's today's day. So let's say the get will be written tomorrow. So I take the get that was written today, and I cross out the day of the week, and I corrected the day of the month, and number the day of the month, and the date of the year, name of the husband, name of the wife, name of the city, and then the Tel HaSefer, write a get lishma, write a new get lishma, and copy all the get with the corrections that we crossed out the old dates. So you write over a whole new get. The get has, you can't use the old get to divorce someone else. The get wasn't written lishma for this couple. It was written lishma for the couple a month ago or for a year ago, whatever. So what happened in one situation was, couple was married for years and years, and they had no children. And the wife would require chalitza if the husband was going to die. The husband was deathly sick. So the husband wanted to spare his wife the agony of going through the chalitza, because the husband's brother lived far away. It would be a whole tircha. And this practice was done bizman ha-tanayim. The Mishnayos talk about that. A person giving his wife a get, so she won't eat chalitza because they never had any children. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik wasn't Masadik Gittin every day. So he took an old get, and he crossed out the name of the husband, name of the wife, the date, and he told the sofer, copy the old get, and write the corrections, write the correct date and the correct names of the people. And he forgot to cross out the year. The year was a year before. So it turns out that the date that they wrote on the get was a year earlier than what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be, let's say, Tavshinayin Tes. And the Sefer didn't realize it. So he wrote Tavshinayin Ches, because Rav Moshe Soloveitchik didn't cross out the number of the year. So they gave the get, and after the get was given, then they realized that they have to do it over again, because it was a get mukdam, hadn't gone on the wrong date. Before they had a chance to write it over again, the husband passed away. So the wife was stuck now. She was an aguna. She needs chalitza. She can't remarry without the chalitza. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came up with an einfall that in Tavshin, it had the correct day of the week, the correct month and the day of the month, and it had the wrong year. But he thought that's not called a get mukdam. It doesn't have an incorrect date. Such a date didn't exist, period. And according to the year that was written in the get, whatever, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz didn't fall out that year on a Wednesday. So such a date didn't exist at all. So it's not considered, he felt it's not considered a get she'en bo zman. It's not considered a get mukdam. Doesn't have an incorrect date. Doesn't have a date at all, because such a date doesn't exist. Tavshin ayin ches lebrias olam didn't have a Rosh Chodesh Tammuz on Wednesday. So where does that lead you? If you have a get she'en bo zman, so the Gemara explains in Maseches Gittin that the whole need for zman, writing the date in the get, is only midrabbanan, mid haTorah. There's no need for zman. And the Gemara gives a whole discussion why, what motivated the Chachamim to introduce zman. So therefore, if you give a get she'en bo zman, mid haTorah, the get is kosher. So he considered this case not a get mukdam, not that it has an earlier date, because it has Tavshinayin Ches instead of Tavshinayin Tes, but it's a get she'en bo zman at all. But so min haTorah the get is good. Midrabbanan, they never really said that the get is pasul. They said we require that you should give over the get. If they would have said the get is pasul midrabbanan, and then she would remarry before she gets a second get, so the children should be mamzeri midrabbanan, which they are not. Or let's say if she would remarry, we should say we should treat her like a married woman who had an affair with someone other than her husband. We would say that she's a soita asur labayla, geshem shasur labal kach asur labo. She can't live with the second husband. And the Mishnah says not so. The vlad is not a mamzer, and she needs another get. But after she gets the other get, she may remain with her second husband. You don't treat her like a soita asur labayla. So you see that even midrabbanan, even though they required this man and a get, they never declared that a get she'en bo zman is pasul. They just said a get she'en bo zman, you should do it over again. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik raised the question, because the woman was stuck, she was an aguna. To get the husband's brother to do chalitza would be a big tirche. He lived far away, it would cost a fortune of money, that he should travel to where he lived, to where the man who passed away lived, to do the chalitza. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik thought that the requirement by a get she'en bo zman, they required you should give another get. Maybe that's only the guy be giving a get, but once the husband died, and for sure the woman is permitted to remarry, maybe they never required you should need chalitza. They never said that if the husband divorces his wife with a get she'en bo zman, that you should need chalitza. So Rav Soloveitchik said that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik had different talmidim, and each talmid picked up a different aspect of the Rebbe, Rav Chaim. So one of the talmidim of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was very strong in Psak Halacha. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik corresponded with him. This is when he still lived in Europe. And he agreed with this chiddush of his, that get she'en bo zman, with the Rabbanan, they only required that you should give another get. But once the husband dies and you don't need a get, did they require that you should need chalitza? So there's room to be mekel that you don't need chalitza. I thought this was a wild shaila. Could only come up in a Soloveitchik family, this kind of a funny shaila. But then I found afterwards that the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva. He discusses the same shaila. A get she'en bo zman, and they require that you should give another get. Is there a requirement, if the husband died, is there a requirement that you have to do chalitza? So Abitza Lepetaburger also has a tshuva about the same thing. Must have come up more often than Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Bitzala has a tshuva. He, the same analysis he starts off, that a get she'ein bo zman is a get even midrabbanan, that's a kosher get. Just that midrabbanan, they're required you should give over the get. They never really declared that it's possible. They just required atzrachas get, you have to give another get. But he thinks that he doesn't agree with the punchline. He thinks just like they required, if the husband is still alive, you should give another get. So too, if the husband would die, they would require that that the surviving brother should do chalitza. The whole beginning of the analysis he agrees to, but the punchline he doesn't agree to. He has many tshuvas on more complicated topics. These are some of the more famous and easier tshuvas that he has. We mentioned Bitzala was a rav in Rabbi Sol Salanter, was instrumental in both convincing the community they should take Rabbi Tzala. He was very young. He was young, I think he was only 24 or something, when he got the Rabbanus in St. Petersburg. It was a big responsibility. It was a big city. And then he was the rabbi there for, I think, 16 years, and then he left. So in the different books, they're not sure what motivated him to leave. So some say that he had to do the gittin for the mishumadim in the church, and he was unhappy about that. Others say because he felt uncomfortable about writing the shemus, the names in the gittin, because many of the couples were given a Yiddish name when they were born by the bris. Then later in life, they were secular people. They never used the Shem Arisa. They never used the Yiddish name. We usually, even if we have a Goyish name, a Yiddish name, let's say my name is Tzvi, and people call me Herschel, but when I get an Aliyah, and they make a Mishad, they call up Yamoid, or they make a Mishaberach, so they use the name Tzvi. So I still use the name Tzvi. Remember, my father used to do a lot of Gittin. So my father once was asking a woman, when your father gets an Aliyah and he makes a Mishaberach, how does he say your name in the Mishaberach? So the woman says, what do you mean my father gets an Aliyah? I get an Aliyah. They call me up like this and this. She gets the Aliyah. Shulchan Aruch, they talk about the three names, the name that you use when you get an Aliyah, the Shem Arisa, the name that they gave you when you were in the cradle, when you were a baby, and the Shem Shenikra B'fi Kol, the name that everybody calls you by. You have to negotiate, you have to navigate between the three names, which ones have to be written and you get, which don't have to be written. So this was a dispute, we mentioned earlier, this was a dispute between the Chasam Sofer and Ramotcha Benet. Ramotcha Benet was older than the Chasam Sofer, and he was the rabbi of the whole area in Hungary, where the Chasam Sofer was a rabbi in Presburg. So they had this machlokes. They always consider the Yiddish name that he was given when he was born by the bris, and the woman got by the bris, you always consider that the more important name, and you mention that first, and then you mention also known, otherwise known as, and then you say the name that everybody calls him by. Or should you say no, maybe the name that they gave when he was a baby, it's never used now, maybe you should just ignore it, leave it out, maybe it's a Shem Shenishtaka. Maybe you should write the reverse. You write the name that he's known by, that everybody calls him by that name, and then you say otherwise known as, and you mention the name that he got, the Yiddish name that he got as a baby, because it's not used so popularly. So that was a big issue. Reb Chaim Moshe has a tshuva. Reb Chaim Moshe was very enamored of Reb David Karlina. So he also writes about how to write the names in the get. He writes, he follows Abdullah Karlina. He considered him the biggest goyim in the generation. He follows Abdullah Karlina. That first he write the Yiddish name that they got when they were a baby, and then afterwards he write Hamachuna, and he write the secular name that they go under. So Bitzala Petterburger was very uncomfortable about this, that which arrangement to write the names in the get. Sometimes you have to write two get, and one get only has one name, the other get has the both names. So others say that was what motivated him, why he wanted to leave St. Petersburg, because he was uncomfortable. He was uncomfortable because Yudlov and Gordon gave him a hard time always making fun of him, or because he had to go into the church to do the gittin, or because of the fact that an issue with the Shemus gittin, he felt uncomfortable about that issue. Others say he was uncomfortable about the Zmani Tfilah, that everything is the Zmanim are so different over here. So Zman Kriyashma, so Zman Tfilah, so early in the morning. But whatever it was, he left St. Petersburg, and he didn't take another rabbonus for the rest of his life. So he went to Kovna, and he learned there. He established a kollel, and it was a musadik kollel. And then the kollel Kovna that he established, Kovna is the big city, and then Slabodka is across the bridge, I think, from Kovna. So the kollel that he established moved to Slabodka, and that was known as the Slabodka Yeshiva. There were two, we mentioned earlier, there were two yeshivas in Slabodka. One was the Musa Yeshiva, and one was the anti-Musa Yeshiva. So the Musa Yeshiva was named after Rabbi Saul Salanter, Knesset Beis Yisrael. And the anti-Musa Yeshiva was named after Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan. That was called Knesset Beis Yitzchok, so his name was Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan. And for a while, Rabbi Baruch Be'er, the famous Rosh Yeshiva, was the head of the anti-Musa Yeshiva. The people from the Musa Yeshiva also came to hear his shiurim, but officially his yeshiva was the anti-Musa, the Knesset Beis Yitzchok. So the kollel in Slabodka, where they had the Musar, that was established by Rabbi Tzila Petterburg. And then for 2-3 years, there was a big machlokes in Europe involving all the yeshivas, whether they should introduce Limud HaMusar and all the different yeshivas. So Rabbi Tzila was an edler person. He was very upset about this whole machlokes. So they moved away from Slav. They moved the Musar yeshiva, they moved it to Kelim. Because it's too much machlekes being in Slabodka, the same place with the anti-Musa yeshiva. Then Rabbi Tzila tried to establish Musa and other yeshivas as well. B'Sof Yomav, the end of his life, the early 1900, 1904 or something, they moved to Eretz Yisrael, and there were other Bali Musa there in Yerushalayim, and he spent the last 3-4 years in Yerushalayim. And he was no longer in Rabbanus and no longer founding any yeshivas. He was basically in retirement. But they had a Beis HaMusar. This morning in the Hallel, they used to have a separate Beis HaMusar where people would go to learn Musar and scream out loud, just like when you learn Gemara. You say the Gemara out loud, so they would learn Musar, not reading it softly like you read a novel or something, but saying the Musar out loud. So the ears should be involved, the mouth and the ears and the eyes, all the avarim of the body, and they should shake a little bit. So even the back would be involved in the reading of the Musar. Like Kolatz Maisei Tomarna, all the organs of the body would be involved in davening, all the organs of the body would be involved in learning Torah. So the same is regarding Limud HaMusar. So the anti-Musanikas were making fun that in Hallel we say Yomrono Beis Aharon, Yomrono Beis Yisrael. We refer to the Kohanim as Beis Aharon, refer to the Jewish nation as Beis Yisrael. When you speak about Yirei Hashem, you don't say Yomrono Beis Yirei Hashem. You say Yomrono Yirei Hashem. They see that they're not supposed to be a Beis Yirei Hashem. It's not supposed to be a Beis HaMusa. They brought the rife in the hollow against establishing a Beis HaMusa. But that's what they did at that time. They had made a separate Beis HaMusa. People should come and say, Yerushalayim also, they had not only Rabbi Tzila Petterburger, the last couple of years of his life, they had other Musanikas who had picked up Musa in the different yeshivas in Europe.